are too happy.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Monday, April 15th. We have two public hearings and two work sessions. Three. We will take the items in the order they are on the agenda because I appreciate we have a legislator with us and people who have signed up to testify on the first bill. But we do need to move rather expeditiously because we have, after that hearing, another public hearing and two work sessions. I'm hoping to conclude the public hearing on the first item by about 9:10. That's what I'm aiming for. That bill has already had a public hearing and a policy committee and a thorough airing of the topic. And we're the revenue committee to focus on the revenue impacts of the proposal. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3349A.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3349A, I do have a document in OLS. It's just titled House Bill 3349 Overview. And there is some background on the mortgage interest deduction, how it stands under current law. I won't go through that right now, but just for reference. But House Bill 3349 is making changes to the mortgage interest deduction. It's making a few limitations on the interest deduction and then directing the resulting revenue that would come from those limitations into two housing type programs. So the limitations put in place by 3349, the first is it's disallowing the mortgage interest deduction for taxpayers with an adjusted gross income above $250,000. And so for taxpayers between $200,000 in AGI and $250,000, the mortgage interest deduction is phased out. So as your income increases above that $200,000, it's reduced in a percentage manner. So someone who has, say, income of $225,000 is getting 50% of the mortgage interest deduction they would otherwise receive. It also disallows the mortgage interest deduction for second homes of taxpayers. So the first residence is still allowed, subject to the income limitations, but the second residence is not allowed for anyone regardless of the income limitations. So that's irrespective. And then directing the resulting revenue, that would require Department of Revenue to estimate the incremental change from putting the mortgage interest deduction limitations in place. And then that increase in revenue, so to speak, is then directed to two programs or two types of programs, promoting affordable homeownership and then preventing homelessness. And it would, the limitation on the mortgage interest deduction would begin with tax year 2019 and moving forward.
Thank you, Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House Bill 3349A and to give the context for it. Oregon has a severe housing crisis, resulting in such statistics as being first or second in child homelessness, depending on which study you look at, and fifth lowest in home ownership rate in the United States, where we've slipped from 69% in 2004 to roughly 61% in 2018. There are multiple factors for this, including a lack of adequate ongoing funding for affordable housing. We are one of just a few states, for instance, that bans the real estate transfer tax, a source many states use to fund affordable housing. While we have gradually been increasing our investments over the last two biennia, most of these investments were one-time funding, and little has gone toward home ownership. In 2017, the House Human Services and Housing Committee passed several home ownership bills with bipartisan sponsorship and unanimous support. These included the continuation of foreclosure prevention and three new programs for down payment assistance, home ownership grants, and home ownership repair and rehab. The foreclosure program was reduced from the previous biennia, and the other three bills were not funded due to lack of resources. Out of the roughly $45 million requested for these homeownership programs, just over $1 million was allocated. We made progress in 2018 in partnership with the Oregon Realtors Association and many housing groups when we passed House Bill 4007, which launched a means-tested first-time homebuyers tax deferral program and tripled the document recording fee. The doc fee increase is bringing roughly $60 million more dollars per biennium, of which about $8 million goes to OHCS homeownership programs. But this is a drop in the bucket compared to the need. This brings us up to the 2019 session. While we have been providing one-time emergency funding for EHA, Emergency Housing Assistance, and SHAP, the State Homeless Assistance Program, over the last two biennia. The governor has proposed raising the CSL from $10 million a biennium to $45 million to provide more adequacy and stability to this fund. She has several other initiatives that require new funding, including for permanent affordable housing, workforce housing in rural areas, technical assistance for tenants and landlords, and $20 million for programs helping homeless children. Legislators are also working hard to address affordable housing. We passed several bills on to Ways and Means, including several from Representative Marsh. Hers include energy-efficient loans for manufactured homes, grants to decommission old manufactured homes, loans for manufactured park preservation, and home ownership repair, rehab, and weatherization. Other housing bills have gone from my committee to your revenue committee, such as tax credits for manufactured home parks and the property tax deferral for seniors and people with disabilities. Some housing bills have gone directly to your committee, such as the capital gains tax exemption for property sold to housing authorities and nonprofit CDCs for the purpose of affordable housing, and a tax credit to help homeowners convert large homes into duplex, triplex, and quadruplexes. But there is little general fund for any new housing bills. A common theme for this session, as Representative Smith Warner well knows, is that new initiatives must have a funding source. This is where the mortgage interest deduction comes into play. While we put $10 million continuing service level into emergency housing assistance and the state homeless assistance, and we scramble for tens of millions of dollars for various programs, we devote $1 billion per biennium to the state's largest housing subsidy, most of which goes to upper-income Oregonians. 60% goes to the top 20% income bracket. In 2017, we proposed House Bill 2006 to reform the MID, resulting in a favorable editorial from the Oregonian, which I have listed on OLS. House Bill 3349 is an even more modest proposal. It will eliminate vacation homes, means test the MID by gradually phasing it out between 200 and 250,000 AGI per household, same for individuals and couples, and redirect those funds to a new Oregon Housing Opportunity Fund at OHCS for programs that build affordable homeownership and prevent homelessness. While our Human Services and Housing Committee passed the Bill 5-3, our committee unanimously passed three amendments. First, to change the date of when DOR estimates the revenue savings, as per Deanna Mack's suggestion. Second, to allow homeowners under the income threshold to receive the mortgage interest deduction on a second home when they are trying to sell their first one. This was an issue that came up in our hearing, and we thought that that was a very fair issue to address. And the third, where the funding would go. While the original bill directed funds to current OHCS programs, that's Housing and Community Services, the amended bill includes new programs that have surfaced over and over again in the legislature, only to fail due to lack of funding. These are in the bill on the last page, page and a quarter or so, so you can see it, but I'm just going to call out a couple things. Under Affordable Home Ownership Program, it can fund programs that include but not limited to revolving loan fund to build new affordable home ownership options, critical health and safety home repairs, weatherization, and seismic upgrades for existing homeowners with low and moderate incomes, particularly for veterans, people with disabilities, or seniors aging in place, living in site-built or manufactured homes, and loans to low and moderate income homeowners to build ADUs for affordable long-term rentals in communities where rental vacancy is under 3%. The homeless prevention programs will include permanent supportive housing for families, housing and services for youth aging out of the foster care system, and support for families to achieve family reunification after involvement in child welfare. I've provided many links on OLIS, links to a variety of local and national articles talking about the ineffectiveness and the regressivity of MID. I want to remind you that we are only looking at the very top percent. There's another document that Kyle, thank you very much, provided me with what percentage of people are under 200,000 statewide. There are 96.1% of people who are under 200,000. That means that less than 4% of people would be affected by this. And 2.4% of people are over 250,000 joint filers, joint or individual filers, which means only 2.4% of people would lose it entirely because of the means testing. So thank you so much for allowing me to speak. I know we have a lot of speakers behind me. Happy to answer questions, but you probably want to hear others.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'll push it to 9:15, but that still means 15 people in 30 minutes.
So we're going to set the timer for 2 minutes each. I'd like to hear from Chris Coughlin, Daniel Hauser, and Tim Pitts. And after that, we will hear from Marty, Cardi, Maud Narrall, and Ethan Livermore.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Finley and Marsh, and members of the committee. For the record, my name's Chris Coughlin. I'm Legislative Director of Children First for Oregon. Children First for Oregon supports House Bill 3349A to invest current dollars more wisely and fairly in response to Oregon's statewide housing crisis. Equitably reforming Oregon's biggest housing subsidy, the mortgage interest deduction, so that state funds can better serve Oregonians facing housing instability and also help us address structural racism, is on the 2019 Children's Agenda and supported by numerous Children Agenda partners, many of whom you'll hear from within the next few minutes. Across Oregon, families with children, youth aging out of the foster care system, and unaccompanied youth are experiencing homelessness and housing instability. There were over 21,000 homeless students in Oregon's K-12 schools last year, and we also know that children often enter the foster care system for multiple reasons. One factor that's traced by the Department of Human Services is inadequate housing and the stress that puts on families. The number of child welfare removals, including housing instability, has been growing over the last 3 years from 13.1% in 2015 to 17.2% in 2017. We also support the investments that you heard Representative Kenny Geyer speak to. I particularly want to also call out the building additional affordable housing for the youth aging out of foster care. It's a significant need, and also funding those services to help families when they are coming back together. In both urban and rural areas, rapidly rising home prices keep the dream of home ownership out of the reach of too many families. Additional investments in supporting home ownership through this adjustment in the mortgage interest deduction can help address historic barriers for communities of color. Thank you.
Am I on?
Yes.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Daniel Hauser. I am the lead for tax policy for the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 3349. I spoke in the prior hearing on the importance of the investments and the value that brings, and I want to hone in a little bit more explicitly here on the tax policy itself. Our analysis and that of many of our national partners have found that the mortgage interest deduction is ineffective, inequitable, and costly. It's ineffective because when they look at similar jurisdictions that do and don't have the mortgage interest deduction, both at the state level and internationally, they find no benefit from having a mortgage interest deduction on the books. This doesn't increase rates of home ownership. This does not boost the number of Oregonians that are able to have the privilege of owning a home. So it's ineffective as a tax policy. The other piece of it is that it fails to promote the equity that we all desire our tax code to center on. And so when we think about the mortgage interest deduction as an itemized deduction, it mainly flows to higher income households, and it only explicitly flows to homeowners and not to renters. And when we also think about who are more likely from a demographic perspective to be higher income homeowners, we find again and again that most of these benefits will be flowing to predominantly white households, not households of color. And so this is a tax policy that is inequitable and fails to improve the equity between different demographic groups in Oregon. And finally, this is extremely expensive. As was noted earlier, we spend almost $1 billion each budget period on this tax policy. Money that could, with this bill, be rerouted, $150 to $160 million, depending on the budget period, off of the top of this bill, could instead of being used as a subsidy for high-income households or for second homes, would instead be routed down to support those who are struggling with homelessness and those who really do need the help affording a home. This will support things like foreclosure avoidance, down payment assistance, and many important programs that will actually boost home ownership instead of being wasted on high-income households that have no problem affording their home. Right now, about 60% of the mortgage interest deduction flows to the top one in five households. Instead, we'd like to see that trimmed down and moved to households that really need the help. So please keep in mind that the mortgage interest deduction is ineffective, inequitable, and costly, and we'd encourage you to support House Bill 3349. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh and Finley, and members of the committee. My name is Tim Pitts, and I'm the owner of Think Real Estate, a residential real estate brokerage in Portland. And I want to talk to you on behalf of many of my colleagues about the long-term financial impact of owning a home. So owning a home makes a huge difference in a person's ability to build up wealth. The average renter has around $5,400 of net worth, and the average homeowner has a net worth of nearly $200,000. In Oregon, as we just heard, only 61% of households are lucky enough to own their own home, and homeownership rates have been declining. Black Oregonians, the rate is even worse. 32% of Black Oregonians own their own home, and that rate has been declining to historic levels. So remember how homeownership is such a critical tool for building long-term wealth. The average white household has a net worth that is 13 times higher than the average Black family. This means more money to be comfortable in retirement, more money to live longer, and more money to pass along to future generations to continue the cycle. So owning a home is arguably the greatest way to build long-term financial stability, but over the last 30 years, homeownership rates have decreased, especially among people of color, and at the same time, wealth inequality has grown and our homeless population continues to grow. HB 3349 is a smart solution that would generate money for housing services that we desperately need. Yes, it eliminates the deduction for second homes, but if you can afford to make the mortgage payment on a second home, I think you can afford to pay the income tax on that money. It also eliminates the deduction for the richest 5%, 4%, the number even gets smaller. I don't see that a person making that much money needs a subsidy. This bill will not cause the richest Oregonians to fall into foreclosure. They're not going to sell their houses and move out of state. This bill will not lead to a decrease in homeownership. The mortgage interest deduction, as we've heard, subsidizes rich people while providing zero relief for rent-burdened people, zero relief for the homeless, and far less support for people of color than for white people. So please support HB 3349. Thank you.
Is Marty, Maud, and Ethan, please?
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and Vice Chair Finley. For the record, I'm Marty Carty, representing the Oregon Primary Care Association. Our association represents Oregon's 32 federally qualified health centers, better known as community health centers. We provide an integrated model of care, serving or taking care of the physical, behavioral, and dental health care needs of over 433,000 Oregonians annually in every county in the state. Community health centers have been an integral part of the health care delivery system since 1965. We are rooted in our history of serving the whole community, regardless of a patient's ability to pay, access to health insurance, or documented status. What that meant then and still does today is caring for the whole person, meaning not just their physical or behavioral health care needs, but housing, food insecurity, transportation, and other social determinants of health. I'm here today to talk about the impact that House Bill 3349A will have for our patients, our care teams, and our providers. Our clinics screen for housing status, but find that it is one of the most difficult needs to address due to a significant lack of available supportive housing and vouchers. House Bill 3349 is an opportunity to realize additional housing supports for many underserved Oregonians. We broadly support the bill and specifically the investment it makes in permanent supportive housing. Individuals who don't have stable, secure places to call home are less likely to eat healthy diets, take medications as prescribed, and maintain jobs and or school attendance. Those all lead to downstream health complications. House Bill 3349A is an opportunity to provide an additional investment in permanent supportive housing and specifically the associated vouchers and supportive services for people who, without support in their tenancy, may not be successful in maintaining stable housing and who, conversely, without housing, may not be successful in using healthcare or other services to maintain recovery, health, and wellness. And I want to add that it's an opportunity to really bend the cost curve down for the state in terms of our health care costs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, members of the committee. My name is Maud Nerol, Revenue Coordinator with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We support this bill. This bill ends the state mortgage interest deduction for the top 2.5% of Oregon households without affecting rentals. This bill also ends the deduction for second homes. We cannot afford to subsidize vacation homes when too many Oregonians have no roof. Removing the deduction from high-income filers will bring in more revenue from those with the greatest ability to pay. The League has a studied position supporting a progressive income tax, and we support the tax changes in this bill. Please support this bill as well. Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ethan Livermore, and I'm the Public Policy Associate with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. EMO is an association of Christian denominations, congregations, organizations, and interfaith partners around Oregon that work to improve the lives of Oregonians through housing and direct service programs, dialogue, and advocacy. Oregon has one of the highest rates of child and youth homelessness in the country. In Lincoln County, where EMO operates a program placing unaccompanied homeless youth with volunteer service providers, 1 in 6 students experienced homelessness during the 2017-2018 school year. Parts of Lane County have rates as high as nearly 1 in 3 students experiencing homelessness. A survey conducted by the U.S. Conference of Mayors stated that the most frequently cited reasons for homelessness are a lack of affordable housing, poverty, and domestic violence. We see the link between domestic violence, homelessness, and importantly, skewed state housing funding priorities play out right here in Oregon. The Child Trends database, citing research from the National Center of Family Homelessness, notes that children without stable homes are more than twice as likely as others to repeat a school grade, be expelled or suspended, or drop out of high school. A quarter or more of homeless children have witnessed violence, and more than half have problems with anxiety and depression. Our organization's own experience leads us to believe that an investment is needed to address this crisis. Over the past decade in the Beaverton School District, unaccompanied homeless youth graduated at a rate of 44%. Youth in EMO's second home program, who have been placed with volunteer home providers, graduated at a rate of 96%. Stable housing leads to more stable homes. Stable homes lead to healthier students. House Bill 3349A reforms the mortgage interest deduction and offers a stark choice, one that EMO sees in clear moral terms. Affordable home ownership and providing housing to children and families and youth who are experiencing homelessness are more important than this tax break. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll hear from Sean, and Jody. And after that, we will go to Nancy Donovan, Jenny Lee, John Calhoun. Oh, it's Jody Hack.
Yeah.
It's usually not
Jody Weiser.
Sorry.
Sure, I'm on the same side as Jody Weiser on this one. sorry, what's that out loud, Madam Chair? For the record, Sean Jillian's representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Wanted to get slightly into the legal gymnastics around this bill. Obviously, the bill is designed to raise a significant amount of revenue. It raises over $150 million in the first biennium, and we believe that this is a distortion of the City of Seattle case as far as requiring a 3/5 vote. Additionally, it takes it sort of a step further and attempts to bind future legislatures to an expenditure of general fund money. This is very different than, say, the document recording fee, where we have a dedicated fund and the dollars are going into there for specific purposes. This is general fund money. This is general fund money that's being spent in a policy committee rather than going through our traditional ways and means process. And we would certainly like to see the bill, if it moves forward, head to ways and means where they can have that conversation about an amount of money that approaches almost $200 million within several biennia. You heard a lot about the policy of mortgage interest deduction in Oregon and who utilizes it. I wanted just to point out a few figures as we look at that. I know proponents like to cite that 60% of the benefit goes to the top 20%. Let's look at real dollars there. That's families that are making $84,000 a year and above. So when we're talking about the top 20%, we are not talking about extremely rich people. Unfortunately, we don't have enough rich people in Oregon because when you have a level at that, effectively, if you had $1,000 a month in other debt payments, you could afford a $283,000 house. $283,000 house on $84,000 a year. Unfortunately, in many parts of our state, the median value is well over $400,000. And in fact, statewide, we've approached almost $320,000. So these top 20% can't even afford the median house anymore in our state. Last thing, and I'll pass it over to my colleagues. I'm sorry that we're limited to 2 minutes. We've heard a lot about what states have higher home ownership rates. I would say to you all that the state that has the highest is West Virginia. The median home price in West Virginia is $102,000 a year. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave, the Government Affairs Director of the Oregon Association of Realtors. I'm not going to be duplicative of what Mr. Jillian's provided on the math sides of the equation. I hope we all have an opportunity to meet individually outside of the committee to look at the real raw numbers, because I think there's some misconceptions out there. Median sales price or listing price in Oregon is $400,000. Of course, that's fairly skewed by the Portland market, where median home prices are $450,000 to $475,000 based on a district-by-district analysis. Of all of those people who use the mortgage interest deduction, based on 2017 numbers provided to this committee, actually, no, I think it was the Senate Revenue Committee, only 5% use that for a second home. There's some large misconceptions about what the second home market is for people utilizing the mortgage interest deduction. Based on estimates provided by the National Association of Realtors and the Home Builders Association, somewhere between 25 and 50% of those utilizing the mortgage interest deduction on a second home are people who are transitioning, either deciding to downsize or upsize, depending on their family dynamics, growth, or shrink. And in those cases, we do have an overlap. I do appreciate the chair of the Housing Committee trying to address that through an amendment. However, it seems to be some mental gymnastics to arrive at the same place that we're already at. One thing I'd like to leave you with is that filtering is a very, very important component of the housing market. Horrible, horrible name. Filtering basically just means as people move up in their property values or choose to purchase a more expensive home, that house that they're leaving becomes the affordable housing. So when we're looking at 155,000 units that we have to replace over the next 20 years, going from 17,000 permits to 30,000 units over the next 20 years, we need to be investing in all sorts of housing stock, because the affordable market rate housing that we build today is the affordable housing of tomorrow. Finally, Madam Chair, the OAR is not an anti-tax association. With 52% of the entirety of the housing stock being properties that are owned outright, I think it would be a much more productive conversation to look at some general tax changes to all deductions, not just looking at people who are owning homes and paying a mortgage based on an arbitrary income test. Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, vice chairs and members of the committee, for the record, Jody Hack here on behalf of Oregon Home Builders Association, and we're here in opposition of House Bill 3349, and I'd like to second what my colleagues here have said to you today, but I won't belabor it to go back over that. OHBA opposes the bill due to the potential impacts on upward mobility in home ownership and building equity. It has the potential to significantly impact the availability of housing stock for moderate to low-income families. If you remove the incentive for higher income earners to upgrade from an old home to a newly built home, you lose an ownership opportunity for the existing house. That impacts all levels of housing affordability, making the housing supply situation even worse than it already is. We're thankful for the sponsors and the chair of the Housing Committee for her willingness to have conversation, and we hope we can find a solution for our housing supply issues in Oregon. This simply isn't it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will have Nancy, Jenny, John, followed by Shannon Phil Hauer, Jody Weiser, and Nessie.
All right. Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and Vice Chair Finley, and members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lee, and I am here on behalf of Building Power for Communities of Color. We are an affiliate organization of the Coalition of Communities of Color, and work dedicated to policy advocacy for communities of color to achieve a more equitable state. We are here in support of HB 3349A as a critical housing policy to address equity both in our housing system as well as taxes. Using our housing resources wisely is critical to increasing housing stability for families of color. Racial disparities in both home ownership and homelessness mean that we need to prioritize helping those who lack opportunities, rather than subsidizing the wealthiest of Oregonians. The mortgage interest deduction, as currently structured, is profoundly inequitable. Homeownership rates in many communities of color are far lower than those for white households. In Oregon, 67% of white households own their home, but just 37% of Latino households and 34% of Black households own theirs. By definition, renters who are disproportionately households of color receive no benefit at all from this deduction. We also see especially among particular demographics, dramatic disparities in homelessness. And home ownership is a critical tool for addressing the racial wealth gap and is a major priority for communities of color. With this, instead of creating wealth-building opportunities for families seeking economic stability, the mortgage interest deduction provides disproportionate benefits to the highest-income Oregonians, worsening the racial wealth gap. But by adjusting this deduction, we can instead help the families who need it most, increasing opportunities for homeownership and stable housing. And given the context of racial exclusion and housing policy in Oregon, this is an absolutely critical tool to help us move forward for a more equitable state. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley. My name is John Calhoun, and I'm representing the Oregon Coalition of Christian Voices today. We support HB 3349 for a simple reason. It caps the tax benefit for families in the top 4% of income so that those in the lowest incomes will have housing assistance. It also says that we should not give tax benefits for those with two houses until everyone has a place to live in their own house. Our faith tells us that it is our obligation to assist those who have the least. Today, Oregon faces a severe housing crisis across the state. We have a strong economy and great wealth, yet too many of our fellow Oregonians suffer from no housing or housing that takes so much of their paycheck that they cannot provide the basics of food and health care. Many people are under the impression that the mortgage interest deduction is necessary for people to own homes. While the interest rate deduction may help those at a below the mean household income of $65,000, it is not the case for those with incomes almost four times that amount. It is also not a factor in other countries. Canada has houses and lifestyles almost identical to the U.S. They do not have a tax deduction for mortgage interest, even though they have home ownership that is currently higher than in the U.S. I have provided a table in my written testimony that shows home ownership rates by various countries. The U.S. has been close to or below the average of other countries in spite of the tax subsidy we provide our taxpayers. OCCV has spoken out many times about the destructive and growing wealth gap we have in our state and in the country. Providing tax benefits for people in the top 4% of income that those in the bottom 40% do not get is no longer acceptable. We ask you to support this bill.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Donovan, and I'm with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The time is right to redirect the $150 million in mortgage interest deduction resources to help support affordable housing and prevent homelessness. Communities across the state are experiencing a housing crisis. Homelessness among school-aged children are at a record high. This bill will stabilize Oregonians who are experiencing homelessness with a strong focus on children. This bill also will help Oregonians become homeowners and keep struggling homeowners in their homes with foreclosure counseling and home repairs, and even build new affordable housing in communities across the state. The League is concerned about our vulnerable citizens, and we believe this bill will increase the state's capacity to better serve this critical population and address our affordable housing crisis. Thank you.
Thank you all. Last panel, Shannon, Jody, Ann. You can start now.
I think if you would. Okay, I can start.
My name is Ann Nessie, and thank you, Chair Nathanson, and Vice Chair Marsh, and Vice Chair Finley, for hearing me today. I'm speaking for sustainability in the housing market, and I'd like to add something to the bill. I agree with everything that's been said, really, because the realtors are right, too, that, you know, maybe our incentives have keep we're not building enough affordable housing. But I can speak with you privately on there's another way to attack that. But what I'm really disturbed at is what Representative Alyssa Kinney-Geyer said about us being the second highest unhoused homeless country, you know, place in the nation. That's very disturbing. And I think people in Oregon would be willing to give up some money, the people in the upper incomes. And it's disturbing to think of how many we can't count that are living in cars that we can't see. So we may be even higher. And certainly there's more in the higher populations, but it's a state issue. And what I would like to add is that more of the funds go to homelessness. I would like to see Oregon. I think the people of Oregon, with you as their representatives, could ask the Ways and Means or something to try to devote more of the funds. Maybe we don't get $150 million, whatever, but it's a start at solving homelessness. Other states have done it, and I think it's about time that we made that a goal and just said, we're going to stop doing this. So I would put all the funds if I could, but it's your decision. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, I'm Jody Weiser, speaking for Tax Fairness Oregon. So it's tax day today. So that's a perfect day to be talking about making this kind of change, which will really affect only the luckiest of Oregonians in a way that they might feel in their pocketbook that seems negative. Proposed changes are not going to do serious damage to anyone. I did a home tour this weekend. I saw a house that had to be worth $3 million. That family doesn't need to get a mortgage interest deduction to live in that home. I saw a home that was an IDU in the backyard of another very modest home. Those families do need mortgage interest deduction. It makes sense for some, but not for everybody. So who will be affected by House Bill 3349? Those who rent will not be affected. Those who own rental properties will not be affected. Those who own a home with no mortgage will not be affected. And those with an AGI of less than $200,000 who own or in the future buy a home will not be affected. Those with second homes and a mortgage on that home will be affected, and those with primary residences, a mortgage, and incomes of more than $200,000 will be affected. But so will those who need shelter, are desperate to stay in their homes, or need help with a down payment. They too will be affected. They're the citizens I'm talking about today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, and members of the committee. My name is Shannon Vilhauer. I'm the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon. In the past 2 weeks, I've been visiting on the ground with local Habitat affiliate staff, volunteer board members, and community leaders in Philomath, Florence, and Mount Angel. I can tell you that Oregon communities of every size are seeking transformational housing solutions. you have the opportunity today to reinvest our state's single greatest housing expenditure in a way likely to have the greatest impact on children, families, and strengthening Oregon communities of all sizes. In contrast, leaving thousands of Oregon students to contend with homelessness for themselves will rack up decades worth of future expenditures that none of our communities, and I truly believe none of our hearts, can afford to pay. Right now, I think that we, literally in this moment, are at a cultural inflection point. Please vote yes on House Bill 3349A. Say yes to children. Say yes to creating real first-time home ownership opportunities. Trickle-down home ownership, we've been trying it for decades, it's not working. Please invest in programs like down payment assistance and new home production that do work. Please turn your back on the culture of exclusion that we've embraced for too long to all of our harm. Do something creative, bold, new that will strengthen our communities, please. And thank you for your consideration of this important legislation.
Testimony. That completes the list of everyone who has signed up for the public hearing. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3349A. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2130. Committee, because we had quite a lot of very good public testimony this morning, we don't have a lot of time to go over the sections of 2130 that we haven't yet been over, but Legislative Revenue Office will be giving us a briefing. We'll have some a few minutes to hear about it, and I do want to save at least 5 to 8 minutes at the end of our meeting to handle our work sessions. Does that seem, looks like everyone's okay with that. Good.
Yeah. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, this is just a tiny refresher. I'm not covering all the sections of 2130. If you remember that House Bill 2130 is the bill that deals with a lot of the automatic or implicit sunsets and explicit sunsets. And so there's a bunch of statutes that are scheduled to sunset. And there's sections on food processing, and there's a few more that we'll talk about in the future. This chart here, I expanded a little bit from last time, just deals with the low-income housing exemption. And if you remember last time, I took the sections that were in 2130. That's on the left of the bill. And so section 3, 4, and 5 all deal with the land specifically for building low-income housing. And then sections 6 through 10 are all part of the same section of statute, which deals with the actual low-income rental housing itself. The one dealing with the land that I have sections 3 through 5 is not permissive. Or subject to local control. And sections 6 through 10 here, which is the low-income rental housing, is permissive. I just wanted to draw your attention to, so the tax expenditure report has revenue estimates in from the Department of Revenue for all the tax expenditures. But the effect of moving out the sunset, often in looking at the revenue impact doesn't really sort of kick in till the properties, in this case we're talking about housing and low-income property, doesn't kick in till those fall out of the exemption. So a lot of these properties are in for a long period of time. So the land for development for low-income housing is in for 7 years, and then it has a 3-year extension. So if you let the program sunset, then you would see the revenue impact sort of kick in 10 years down the road when all the properties that are currently in the program fall out and then no new ones are added. And so looking at the taxable value of all the properties that are in the program for that land, it's currently around $7 million. And then when you're dealing with the low-income rental housing, all the property that is in that program, that stays in for 20 years once it's approved, and that's about $65 million. And so you can see in the column where I have annual cost, that reflects the sort of statewide average of $16 per thousand taxable value.
Thank you. Do we have a sign-up sheet for public testimony?
I did not have anyone sign up.
All right. Committee, are there questions? Should we have a little bit of conversation about this, or is this enough information for you for this morning? Yes.
This is what we asked for.
Yeah.
So good job. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Yes, Representative Marsh. I'm just interested in the amendment process here. We have had testimony that some of these sections seem to be moribund. For example, the golf course seems to not be something that anybody cares about anymore. So are we initiating any sorts of amendments to the base bill?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, League of Oregon Cities reached out to the golf course, and it looks like that's not being utilized. So we're mm-hmm. working on that. And there are a couple other programs that are scheduled to sunset, one with spouses of public safety officers, for instance, and then the 130% test for intangible property. So there are some additional sunsetting pieces, and then the golf course piece that you mentioned. This today was just for the housing portion, but
okay.
Those are good points.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Have there been any other communications with Legislative Revenue Office about any details related to those sections that we're looking at today?
For these sections right here?
Yes, for the ones we're hearing today. Anything that would indicate that there's some fine-tuning needed on the language?
Chair Nathanson, we haven't had any additional contact.
Okay. Anything else? I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2130. We're ready to move to work sessions.
We have.
I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2684.
Chair Nathanson, House Bill 2684 deals with the repeal of what's become called the Gigabit Bill, and we have a -2 amendment. So the original bill was to repeal the Gigabit property intangible property tax exemption. The -2 has that for 1 year, the 2019 and 20. To 2020 property tax year, that the property of the qualifying company would be assessed at 75% of its value, real market value, which would in effect obviously be a 25% reduction. And so we have a minimal, with the -2, we have a minimal expenditure impact, and the revenue impact for the first year, so repealing the gigabit exemption would lead to a revenue increase because there's currently an exemption. So the revenue impact would be for the 2019 to 2021 biennium an increase of $4.7 million, and then moving to 5.6 and 6.0 in the next two biennium.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2684 as amended with the -2 amendment to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
I think we have to do the amendment first.
Oh, we have to do the amendment. Okay, where's the amendment?
Finley has it.
Oh. Finley's got the amendment.
Yeah, I do. You do.
That motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move the -2 amendment be adopted into HB 2684.
I had it. Representative Marsh has moved the -2 amendment adopted into House Bill 2684. Discussion. Let's hear a little bit about this. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to add this amendment to this. As you know, myself and Representative Nose have been involved in this in varying levels of intensity over the last few years as we've tried to wrestle with the unintended consequences of language that we think is very specifically written for one purpose, and that so often turns out not to be. I'd also like to, checked in and got help and support from all of the other members of this committee as we tried to get to a place that seemed that would give us both certainty and fairness in this, and I feel like we've gotten to a decent place on that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Are you ready?
So with no more discussion on the motion to amend, are there any objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2684 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Finley has moved House Bill 2684 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the bill. Any objections? There are no objections. The motion has received the required majority and is declared passed. The carrier will be Representative Nose. Can we joint carry?
Would you like
is that acceptable?
That? Yes, please.
Yes. Representative Smith Warner will be a co-carrier.
Thank you.
I am closing the work session on House Bill 2684, opening a work session on House Bill 2141.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2141, we do have a dash two amendment. The amendment is technically a gut and stuff amendment, but it's the content really hasn't changed. It was just there were a number of tweaks made throughout the bill, so it was more easily drafted as a full amendment change. But so with the dash two, House Bill 2141, this is a committee bill that has been discussed for a couple sessions now, and it's relating to the transfer of tax credits and the certification. So in terms of just as a refresher on tax credits, a lot of times there will be a tax credit that will be a requirement of a certifying agency that will certify a taxpayer as qualifying for the tax credit. That certification information is then passed on to Department of Revenue that then tracks that information for use when the taxpayer applies to use the tax credit when they file their taxes. So what the underlying bill does is it's grabbing a broad number of statutes, and I do have a document that has the section by section contents because it is quite a long bill, but it's grabbing all the associated statutes related to tax credits and the transfers and having a uniform way in which the credits will be transferred. And then also many of the changes in the later sections are making the same or a similar conforming change related to the certification requirements. So the agency that is certifying a specific tax credit would then send that information on to Department of Revenue. We do have the fiscal. There is no impact on the fiscal, and on the revenue impact side of things, we would expect this to be minimal just by applying a uniform transfer process and certification process could help in essentially receiving the paperwork and making sure the right taxpayers are claiming the tax credits.
Okay. Yes, Representative Finley.
I have a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there not standard proactive procedures currently in place for tax credit transfer?
No. Yes, Representative Finley, right now in statute, there is different language that's a little bit scattered throughout, and in more recently, as credits have been enacted, the goal has been to put that uniform language in going forward. And this is based in some cases on this was the biomass tax credit is the most recent that this language was included in. So this is going forward, this is being in many cases amended into bills that are in front of the legislature as well. And that's happened in this session too, is to make sure that this language is getting included in any bills going forward as well.
Follow?
Yes.
So will this passage of this bill clean up all of the tax credit statutes so they're all transferred in the same, transferred and tracked in the same manner?
Yes, Representative Finley, that's the intent, and that's why you see so many of the sections are affected, is there are a number of these tax credits that have expired that are transferable but still have a tail in their use because they can be carried forward. And some of that has to do with the clawback provisions of if the certifying agency discovers a taxpayer that didn't fulfill the requirements of the credit, they can work with Department of Revenue to then disallow that credit.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle, Section 7 seems to transfer some duties from the Department of Revenue to the Housing and Community Services Department. And so I'm wondering, is that going to require any additional employees to do that, or is that something within their purview that they're willing to take on?
Yes, Representative Reschke, the fiscal came back with no impact, and I know housing was consulted when the Dash 2 and the Dash 1 were being drafted. They are in the room if you'd like them to speak directly to it, but we haven't had any indication that there would be a fiscal related to that change.
That's fine. Thanks.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. I would just say, having been plunged by our former chair, Rep. Barnhart, who assigned me to this two years ago, into the minutiae of transferability of tax credits, this is important work to just clarify across the realm of tax credits how this is to be done and how it's to be tracked. And I think it's also a cautionary note to us as we put together tax credits or consider proposals that come forward. I mean, there are significant policy questions when you are putting together a tax credit and then looking at who's actually going to benefit from it down the line. So we should be always be thinking about this as we go forward, but it's good to get this straightened up.
Any other questions or comments? I have a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move the Dash 2 amendment be adopted into House Bill 2141.
Representative Marsh has moved the Dash 2 amendment adopted into House Bill 2141. Discussion on the amendment. Any objections? No objections. The amendment passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2141 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh has moved House Bill 2141 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? No objections. Motion passes. The carrier will be Representative Hernandez. I am closing the work session on House Bill 2141. There is no other business before our committee today. We are adjourned.